So we could put a name, Heartland. And also, just while we're sitting here together, it comes to my mind some Zen practitioners that go places where there has been suffering, intense suffering, like concentration camp ruins or remains, and purposely meditate there instead of going to like where it's easier or less in your face or less intense. And I think that in a way we could do that anywhere. There's been suffering everywhere. And here we're in land that was stolen, and then slaves were used to kill the land. And then now it's being brought back as heartland. So just a sense of being here with those layers of this place and any place and any of us. And in this talk, we're talking on all the levels, no matter which level we're explicitly talking about. And in this country, there can be, and in many countries, there can be drought inland. There can be no rain farther in. Can be too dry. And what would help is not as helpful to maybe try to do something right where it's dry. But maybe what's needed is something closer to the big water, to the sea. And people have found that if there are trees planted along the edge of the sea, or if trees are allowed to stay growing there, that helps the rain all along the way going into the heartland. And part of the way it works is that the trees actually offer not only the water that they draw through their bodies, they offer thousands of gallons of water through their bodies every day, but they also offer their dust. So the leaf particles help the evaporated water form the droplets that come down. And then that can become another cloud that goes in more inland and rains, and then it kind of goes in waves farther and farther from the source of the water. So sometimes when we're aware of the dryness in us, we may need to really listen to the voice that says something that doesn't seem to make any sense. That says, plant the trees over there, even though you're feeling terrible over here. And it's interesting that there seems to be so much dust. Why is it, you know, how come the coal dust doesn't make rain? So a lot of the pollution a lot of the dust that's called pollution is too fine, it's too small, and the leaf dust is just the right size. Mm-hmm. Another way that trees are our friends. In ourselves and in this room and in this country and in this planet, we can look, and it's easy if we want to see how much dislocation there is. And sometimes it's easy to get distracted by the suffering that's caused by that dislocation and forget to try to really feel what are the root causes of that. And I find that the Tao Te Ching puts it really, really well, as do many other people, that it's Tao Te Ching says, if we say that one thing is good and another thing is bad, we are asking for thieves. We say this has value and this doesn't. We're asking for violence. So in a way, we've already contributed to violence by putting one thing up and one thing down, or one thing as value and one thing as useless. We can feel into how that does damage to both. It does damage to what is valued, and it does damage to what is disvalued. And please, like, feel your way through this, thinking about racism and sexism and all of those ways of curtailing our freedom on this planet. But also just so simply feel how easily we gravitate towards thinking that, oh, I had a good meditation. And how that's smaller than the good meditation was, if it was a good meditation. The main part of my first talk today is a story that is a true story that's true when it happened, and it's true timelessly about us inside also. And over the years, I felt very careful about sharing this story because it feels... It's very tender and powerful. But it is one of the few stories that I have repeated over the years. And this is, repeating this talk is coming from that talk about repetition. So it's very nice. My friend Kavita, which means poetry, but her name is really Kavita, told me this story. And she was part of it in Australia. She was part of a yoga group there, and one of their requirements was to do service work. And so one of her options was to work in a school or a facility where people who were not easy to teach went. People that didn't fit in the other schools. And Kavita, I think she was wearing a robe and everything, like orange robe. And like the wooden beads and everything. So other people in the school were not. So they gave her the low class, the low performing class. And this is one place where we could see some of the contradictions in these power structures that happen. So the good class got someone else. And the bad class got Kavita. In the room were young people who usually didn't make eye contact, ever. And Kavita was given this curriculum of what she was supposed to be going over with them. And it didn't take her long to realize that she was not going to follow the curriculum. So in the low class, sometimes there is a way that there's more freedom. Because no one was checking on her. And it was obvious to her that she was not going to follow the curriculum. The rules did not apply in the low class. So she started reading from her favorite Sanskrit text, which was the Patanjali Yoga Sutra. And someone looked at her. Someone who had never made eye contact. In the class, he'd never made eye contact with anyone, looked at her and kept looking at her and kept looking at her. So she kept reading. She didn't know what was happening. He couldn't speak. Another kind of theme throughout this talk and this story, if we're trying to feel what's another way other than making something right and something wrong, or something good and something bad, something better, something worse, kind of feeling the place that is just value and valuing at the same time, like it values, appreciates, and it is value, not as opposed to something unvaluable. And from there, finding the leading edge, which is the other name for this talk. So the leading edge that just inspired Kavita to break the rules. They already think I'm crazy anyway, so I'm going to read this text. I'm going to stay with what at least could be a value. And so this young man kept looking, and it so happened, as it does so happen sometimes, that someone came around and was on a tour visiting schools like this with a new technology that is a keyboard. So someone who can't use their throat to speak can use their fingers to communicate by typing. And because Kavita was low in the low class, she was able to say, "You have got to talk to this young man." So we can sometimes, if we go into the place that is considered useless, it's sometimes very easy to feel where to begin and where communication is going to happen. Which it did. The Kavita and the woman with the keyboard had to get a dictionary out to understand his vocabulary. Because he was listening his whole life. He had been listening, and he could read. He had been reading. He just thought he was the only one that thought the same things that Patanjali was talking about. He thought he was alone in that experience of, I don't know if you know the book at all, and I don't know how the English translations are, but it's one of the books that really takes you beyond any concept you could have of enlightenment. It says, that's a good experience, but it's just a good experience. Keep going. And that's a special power. Don't fall for it. Keep going. And there's a whole big chapter on all the special powers. And he thought, I thought I was the only one that I knew that kind of tapped into that. And at the same time, there was a lot of healing to happen just by his being listened to. So that great spiritual place in us doesn't mean that we're not allowed to reveal pain. He had a lot to say about his time growing up before he was sent to the school. Where he witnessed his father abusing his mother. And they thought he didn't understand. And wait, because it's not like him, the bad guy, because this is about us. Over here, we're nasty to ourselves, and we think that that part doesn't understand and doesn't feel the pain of it, doesn't hear every word. He said two words. One day. To his father. You. He said you. And he said animal. So that was when he got sent to the school. And we can feel the pain of that, and we can also see that's how he met Kavita, and then that's how he met this other person with the keyboard, and that's how he met his mother and his father again. How his mother could get help. So sometimes, it's not that it's better that it happened that way, but sometimes we can feel a kind of leading edge through our lives that comes around. If we're able to stay with it, sometimes it comes around, like bringing more help with it, like when the clouds keep gathering themselves and getting farther inside with their rain. At the end of the Yoga Sutra, towards the end, it might possibly be the last line, I'm not sure. It talks about a thundercloud of Dharma, Dharma Mega. Not by Mega. Dharma. It's Dharma Mega, not Mega Dharma. And it's, I think it's such a beautiful image. It's when we really let help come and we gather ourselves into that place of value and valuing, like a thundercloud. And maybe we do that again and again and again and again and again, until it's touched everything. And then it's this cloud of Dharma that's ready. It's about to rain. It's ready wherever it's needed. It's about to rain. So we've had a few questions, a few moments or suggestions of grappling with how to be with vulnerability and power, and how to learn not to dominate, how to learn not to trust power over, how to learn to trust something else, being moved, how to trust being moved. And one way that I think about it is this word dominate reminds me of the Spanish word domar, which is like to tame an animal. If we could rather not try to tame the animal, like let the wildness stay, but find ways of bringing out the love. So even like that father, that husband, who deserved what his son called him, though it's a disgrace. I mean, it's not fair to the animals to call that animal. How could we find a way to let the wildness stay and just unlock the love? That's the only part I wonder about in the story is, and then what happened to him? Did he get to go to jail where he would just learn more about aggression? What are we going to do with that man in us? And of course, I don't mean in any way tied. I'm not talking about the gender of our bodies right now. So, one of my favorite parts of what happens next is the last class before Christmas break. I don't know if any of you are teachers, have ever taught children, if you remember the last class before a long vacation. But that's a kind of wildness. And for some strange reason, and it could be because of the class system within the school, Kavita and her class were given shop. So I don't know if they use that word anymore, but it was a class where you're doing like hammering and stuff like that. So like wild with a hammer in a small room before vacation time. And I don't know how many students, but there was only one Kavita in that room. And she's the way she described it, and she's hilarious. She's a great storyteller, partly because she really laughs at herself a lot. She would go to one corner and try to get them quieted down. She'd get them quieted down, and then she'd run up to the other corner. Hammer, stand on the table, please, or whatever. And then over here, and over here, and over here. And I don't know how long that went on, but a long time. And finally, she was desperate enough to kind of look up from one project, next project, next project, to look up and have a glimpse of the whole room and see this young man with his keyboard on the side over there and just go over there. What took you so long? Sit down. Quiet. Can you just feel how the room is quiet? So the room got quiet. Wendell Berry points out that we have probably most to learn about how to live as a people with a culture for a change in this land. Obviously, to the people who lived here before, not the ones that we were brought over, not the ones that came over running away from problems over there, but the ones who already lived here. And one of the more helpful things I've ever heard comes from the Iroquois democracy, where they ask people to be the leaders, the ones who don't want to be the leaders, the ones who are not interested in being leaders. Those are the ones that are asked. And that asking is very important. So first, that means to be able to ask, to have the honor of asking. It means finding a way not to hear what is telling us, I'm the one, I'm the leader, I'm the power. Or listening to them in a different way, which will tell us what kind of leader that is. And what might be a better role for that person. And then feeling, so another way of saying that is like Kavita in the room, like sometimes if we can take a look around the room and not just and think, well, I'm doing okay because I got them quiet, oh shit, oh. And sometimes that's enough if we're that desperate that we can see who is there or what is there. And at least go over and see what that has to say. And sometimes it's necessary to be that person sitting on the side, seeing the situation and waiting. I think that's part of the Dharma Mekha. Being so ready and so full, but sometimes it's good to wait to be asked. So that's all I have to say, if anyone has anything to say.
Do you know what happened with this nobody after, like, you know, 10, 12 hours after?
Well, that would be now. I can ask Kavita. I know that she was working with someone on a book about it, and I wanted to have time to email her and ask if that was out yet so that I could tell you. So I'll try to find out. So it feels to me like it would be good if we just have time. There's 20 minutes before dinner. And some people might like some fresh air, and some people might like to be here. So,
I have a question.
Okay.
You just said, you just talked about there being the time that you have to be asked.
Right.
No, but somebody has to be asked.
Mm-hmm.
And then a time when you, what was it? No, just no to act, or?
Did I say that?
I don't know.
I should have said that. I think I just implied that by just saying sometimes can be good.
And I just know that there have been times in my life, I mean, that I can remember very clearly, when I sat in that place of knowing there's a possible action, and yet feeling like, well, why should it, you know, who am I to do this action?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And feeling like, well, you know, if I was asked, then it would be time, but I'm not being asked. But
right.
I know that it's right, but,
right.
you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's, in the story that we can still use as a touchstone, Kavita wasn't asked to read the Patanjali Yoga Sutra.
Mm-hmm.
But she just did. And so sometimes it's giving ourselves the freedom to be nobody, and then nobody can be somebody, and just do it. That's usually easier than like being somebody and trying to find nobody. Yeah. So what I've found useful has been knowing what's my conditioning, which has been, no way, I'm not going to say a word in a group, for example. and when I can, without aggression to myself, doing it anyway. So it's not like waiting till there's not fear, but there's fear and there's words coming out of my mouth. And then, I don't know if this is other people's experience, but what I find is that many times, life gives me a training period where I can get used to that. And then it shifts to be, even though you have something interesting to say, don't try to be cute, and you know it, you know. And then the holding back with the knowing, not needing to, feeling the, that there could have been a forcefulness if I would keep going with my new role as someone who speaks in the group, even though I'm afraid to speak in the group. So the role or the, it would be easy to make something out of the relief of, the word I'm about to make up, unenslaving myself mm-hmm. from the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
That releases a lot of power. It's a relief. One could feel proud in a real way. But then that can start to be another kind of pride. And so I think when that, there starts to be a danger of that really round pride of like, I know that wasn't me that just spoke. Thank you. To, I'm going to do that again. I'm going to make it rain. That life helps ease out of that. So maybe saying something and no feedback. So at first I find there could be like encouragement from life, and then, okay, try this. Try to fly without your training wings. Without any cheerleading. Just because you can fly and you have wings and they like to go out here and then down here. Call it flying if you like.
And sometimes you fall, and that's okay too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Because the pride would say falling is not okay. And in the experience, it is absolutely part of the levity. The gravity is part of the levity. Sorry, I'm sorry, wait. I just want to make sure it felt like there was... Just like, that's one way, but then there's other ways. And other ways of being in that delicate place of wait to be asked, speak, act, silence. But having the chance that we're allowed to make mistakes, then we can learn. Okay. Yes.
I was just going to add to that wings analogy. When you said the Tao and the good and the bad, and if you learn to fly without your little wings, training wings or without compliments from others.
Yeah.
When you fall, it doesn't matter because there's no one there to. The people who are complimenting you are often the first who are there to mock you too.
Mm-hmm. If it's that kind of compliment, yes, mm-hmm. It will be that kind of, that other kind of non-support.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that could clarify and help give more ways to explore for yourselves what is the slavery of the oppressors within and without.
Mm-hmm.
Where if I'm successful and that I need that, I need to know that I'm successful to know that I'm valuable. Good luck next time.
I liked what you said about the people who are acting maybe some but like animals, and to not try to somehow tame the wildness, but to draw the love out. And I guess my reaction to people acting like that in the past has mostly been to just go away, sort of like get as far away from them as possible, as quickly as possible. And more recently I feel drawn to do something else, but not sure what. And I definitely feel that sometimes from a place of like wanting to protect others, like just put the muzzle on, put them in a cage, or somehow make them like stop. And so I'm just wondering what the other options are.
So in one way we could just say there's everything is an option. But to come to that place of the thundercloud that's ready to ring. I think if we can recognize that the flee response is really what an animal would wisely do many times, that it's only a difficulty for us when that's our only option. And it's a running away from something that we need to sometimes not run from. And it's a running away from something in us as well as outside. And so part of it is feeling, so without being heavy on yourself, but really, really feeling into that similar place in yourself to what you're seeing and getting paralyzed by. And to let that keep having a chance to clear. I guess what I mean is doing that mostly and as continuously or as constantly as possible to yourself. Letting the wildness be wild and unlocking the love, then it's happens in the kind of chemistry of meeting in the moment. That's what I mean by everything is an option. it can be worthwhile, as I said, to have as a kind of guideline where I know I have know what I'm not going. I can know where I don't go, so that I can just play with going there, even if it's really clumsy at first. We're allowed to fall. So I don't stand up for myself. So I do what looks like standing up for myself at first. And then that can start to get more fluid and fluent. And knowing that you can stand there and not run away can help know when it's time to run away without the abandoning of anything inside. It's just a simple, wise action in love sometimes. But I think it helps us know that experientially when we know that we can stay when that's also love. And it helps a lot to see other people do it. That chemistry where something comes out unexpected. There's a joke or there's a hug or there's a... So we choose our friends wisely. Like when the bird is still a baby and still needs the training wings, it probably needs to see someone fly like 100 times at least before it's even gonna go with the training wings, much less without them. So but it would kill the bird to stay in the nest. Does that make sense, or do you think that's... It is important that people who have sensitivity not only run away. It's like when the rain has come that far inland and things are sprouting, we need to take care of the sprouts, and eventually that will have enough vibrancy to stand on its own. To pass the rain on, like to another country or whatever. Anything else?
My experience is that the victim and the perpetrator are many times one and the same, and it's in the act of forgiveness.
Would you mind just saying what you do so that people who didn't know that, what your job is, so that they know where you're coming from?
Okay. My job is to work with children who have been severely abused and abandoned from the ages of 0 to 3. And I've experienced tremendous ritualistic abuse and sexual abuse and neglect and abandonment and so forth. And so they come to me, and my job is to fix them. And it's finding the wildness and allowing that to, how to tame that and bring love back into them, because they don't understand what love is. So it's being really able to maybe step into because the need to survive sometimes is to run and to attack sometimes. And so it gets very confusing for them as to being the victim and the perpetrator. Mm-hmm. How does one and the same And how do we receive love enough to forgive? And it's the tenderness. It's that all the stories you're talking about, just that reaching, that touch, that the eye contact.
One of my Dharma sisters says, I think it might be from the Tibetan tradition, but I'm not sure. She says, we've all done everything. So that's another way of, like, feeling.
I'm sorry,
we've all done everything. And if it's from the Tibetan tradition, they probably mean really, really, in one life or another. But we can also take it within this experience of life. And just to feel how, if no matter what I have done or could possibly do accidentally or even on purpose, still, I still belong. I still have value. I can't get rid of it. That's what makes it possible to see what's going on in us. If we're holding in our back pocket that even the possibility that something I could do or something that someone could do is like puts them in the lower class, makes them inhuman, then something similar in myself will hide itself from my seeing. Mm-hmm. And when we open it that wide, then it is important to know that we can run away and know that we can stand both. So not like forming a picture of how you alone could face any kind of act of violence by yourself, no matter what, at any time. That's not what I'm pointing to. And we're allowed to feel, I will never forgive. We can feel that too. It just also widens up what is forgiveness. Doesn't mean that we're glad that something's happened or is going to happen or is happening. But without that, our heart is really stuck inside. The heartland is dry. So it can be like, I don't agree with what you did or what that person did or that my own people did, whatever. And not only do I not agree, I would do anything to stop anyone from doing that ever again. But that can be forgiveness too. It's not like, well, no problem. Mm-hmm. And here we are. We can disagree, and here we are. This is still the question about Sangha.